The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, my name is Naomi Lambert from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share articles with you from The Assembly, which publishes in-depth reporting on North Carolina at theassemblync.com. Well, today we're starting with an article from Politics and Government. In Canton, a small town mayor faces big questions. And this article is by Jessica Wakeman. Employees at the Pactiv Evergreen paper mill kept calling Canton Mayor Zed Smathers one day in March 2023. A mysterious meeting had been scheduled that afternoon. Did he know why? Then the mill's security team contacted the Canton Police Department. They may want to station officers around town, security ominously suggested. At that point, we knew something was up, said Smathers, who was then in his second term as mayor. Finally, someone in the mill's administrative offices contacted the mayor with a tip. Pactiv Evergreen was planning to close the 118-year-old facility, which made products like paper cups, in just 3 months. Later that evening, the mill's manager called and read the mayor a press release to confirm the news. It was like getting the news that someone has suddenly died, Smathers told the Assembly. It's been a little over 3 years since Canton abruptly lost its largest employer, more than 1,000 jobs and 36% of its tax base. The wound is still fresh for Smathers. He has been navigating its impacts, including the sale of the mill property, the start of demolition, and discussions about redeveloping the space. Following the mill closure, Smathers recalled, a friend commented that it would be a miracle if Canton, a town of 4,400, existed in 2 years. That attitude pissed me off, he said. Instead, Smathers said, we have fared exceptionally well, which has not surprised me because I know how tough our town is. Regional government organisations helped laid-off Pactiv employees find new jobs. At the time of the closure, Land of Sky Regional Council Mountain Area Workforce Development Board Director Nathan Ramsey told the Asheville Citizen Times that there were 1,200 available manufacturing jobs in the region. While Ramsey and Smathers say they are not aware of data showing where mill workers landed, the county's unemployment rate as of this June was 3.2%, roughly the same as it was in March 2023. Anecdotally, both also said they are aware that many of the people Pactiv Evergreen laid off have found other manufacturing work, although some retired or moved away. I am not hearing an outcry, Smathers said. The closure had one positive impact on downtown Canton. It ended the rotten egg smell that lingered in the air on certain days of the production cycle. Without the sulfuric stench, locals think Canton could become a tourist destination. The town fields requests every other day regarding space for incoming businesses, said town manager Lisa Stinnett. While some inquiries are about redeveloping the mill site, many are from mom and pops looking for a place on its quaint main street, which is dotted with gift shops and restaurants. I think a lot of people anticipated the town drying up and blowing away, Stinnett said, and it has been the opposite. The changes have forced the town and its leaders to think about their future, and Smathers is encouraging them to dream big. At the same time, Canton is clawing its way back from two weather disasters in 5 years. Both have put Smathers, a rare Democrat in small-town western North Carolina, in a spotlight that has led to speculation about his potential future as a candidate for higher office. But first, he's got to get the future of his hometown on solid footing. The Redneck Roosevelts. Smathers, 43, seems lab-grown to succeed in local politics. He's garrulous, conventionally handsome, and slaps people on the back in greeting. Perhaps more importantly for a small mountain town, the Smathers family goes back 8 generations in Canton. His granddad owned a grocery store downtown, and his father, Pat, became mayor while Zeb was in high school and served for 12 years. When a New York Times reporter visited Canton last year, she wrote, "If Canton had royals, it would be Mayor Smathers' family." Smathers joked that someone once told him they are the redneck Roosevelts. Smathers recalls drawing a picture in third grade of what he wanted to be when he grew up, a lawyer. He attended Duke University, where he was president of the Duke Democrats, and then earned his law degree at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, in 2008, before returning to work at his father's firm. Together, they run Smathers & Smathers, Attorneys at Law. In 2013, he ran unopposed for the town's Board of Aldermen. He filed for office the day after marrying his wife, Ashley Smathers. His message centered on the promise of Canton's blue-collar roots. "We had to build the belief that we did deserve nice things and we did deserve to have a future," he said. In 2017, the sitting mayor declined to run again. "I thought it was time to continue the momentum we had," Smathers explained. He ran unopposed that year, then again in 2021 and last November. Smathers gives off the air of a southern good old boy, describing his happy place as drinking a yard beer on his lawnmower. "When he offered me moonshine during an interview, it wasn't clear if he was kidding." He looks like an extra from Top Gun, down to the aviator sunglasses, Western Carolina University politics professor Chris Cooper said. While picking up a coffee across the street from his law office, Smathers spent 5 minutes chatting with a man about their mutual love of World Wrestling Entertainment before he finally introduced himself as the mayor. But Smathers is also a bona fide politics nerd. His iPhone background is a photo of President John F. Kennedy. He points out the first edition of Edmund Morris's The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt on his office bookshelf and reminisces about the impact the West Wing had on his political education. "I still believe in Bartlett for America," he mused. He exudes a kind of Jed Bartlett populist optimism. "I inherently believe in our American system," Smathers said. "I inherently believe in the power of public education and protecting us and the ideals that we set out. As Yankee Doodle as it sounds, I believe in what this country can be." But neither he nor his wife, a local teacher who is now a stay-at-home mom to their six-year-old son, Stone, loves the title of politician. "The word has a negative connotation," she said, "wherein people think you're not working hard for the people that you represent." "Being Canton's mayor is not just a position to him," Ashley said. "I think he sees this as a true calling." Liz Rhine, the owner of Papertown Coffee, which sits across the street from his office, said she believes he always has the town's best interest at heart. "You know he has Canton's back." She added, "Every time he comes in, he always asks, like he will say it every time, 'Do you need anything from me?' He wants to make sure that our business is good, that we're surviving." For the last 5 years, a big part of making sure the town survives has been what Smathers called the exhaustive work of advocating for state and federal recovery funding. In 2021, Tropical Storm Fred struck the mountains, destroying multiple homes in Canton and Pisgah High School's athletic fields. The town suffered from about $11 million in losses, Stinnett said. 3 years later, just as FEMA recovery projects for Fred got underway, Hurricane Helene put downtown under 10 feet of water, including Town Hall, the police station and the fire department. Helene-related losses are estimated at approximately $15 million, Stinnett said. Pactiv's shutdown eliminated $1.2 million in tax revenue from Canton's budget. "For a small town, that is significant," Stinnett said. "To say it was devastating is probably an understatement." Smathers said the town has just eked by financially. Altogether, Canton has received approximately $153 million in state and federal funds, much of it in grants, for the mill closure, Fred and Helene, Stinnett said, to cover costs related to wastewater management and treatment, water and sewer infrastructure, flood mapping and facility relocation, among other services. In 2025, Canton and Hayward County also received $5.75 million from a settlement from PACTIF. She attributed the influx to the mayor's political contacts. He travels to Washington, D.C. four times a year and to Raleigh 4 to 6 times a year to advocate to the General Assembly. Smathers has maintained relationships on both sides of the aisle in a pretty remarkable way and in a way that has benefited his constituents, Cooper said. In March 2025, he appeared at a press conference with U.S. Representative Chuck Edwards, a Republican from nearby Hendersonville, to announce a $41 million grant for Canton's water system. He has publicly thanked Republicans in the General Assembly and vowed to work with them. And he's mentioned to me multiple times that State Representative Mark Pless, a Republican who represents Hayward County, donned a wetsuit and rescued people from flooding in Canton during Helene. Mayor is officially a nonpartisan position in Canton, but Smathers is known as a Democrat who can work with anyone and is willing to work with anyone, said State Representative Lindsay Prather, a fellow Democrat who represents Buncombe County. And that will get you very far, especially in Western North Carolina. Pless concurred. He's willing to work with about anybody. That makes it a lot easier because a lot of times the Dems and Republicans, we don't communicate as people like to think we would. Smathers says that bipartisan collaboration is practical. We are best as a town, state, country when we're doing bold things, he said. But sadly, we have let politics, pettiness and social media bring us down where it's difficult to do even the small projects without ripping each other apart. Death by a thousand Facebook comments. Demolishing a legacy. The biggest question on everyone's mind in Canton is what will be built in the mill's place. Following PACTIF Evergreen's announcement of the closure, more than 30 prospective buyers considered the site, a local newspaper, The Mountaineer, reported. In January 2025, Speartas Worldwide, an industrial demolition, environmental remediation and redevelopment firm based in St. Louis, paid $3.36 million for more than 700 acres, including 188 acres of the former mill site, 104 acres of Lake Logan, and 250 acres for a landfill, as well as a wastewater treatment plant, a coal yard, a former schoolyard, and a couple of buildings downtown, company CEO Eric Speartas told the Assembly. The demolition of the mill began in March 2025 and is expected to take 2 years. The former mill site project has been dubbed Two Banks Development LLC, a name Speartas came up with to reflect the Pigeon River which runs through it. Why not name it after the river itself? A pigeon's a dirty bird, the CEO explained. This March, Canton purchased 35 acres from Speartas that included warehouses, a distribution center, and chipyard for $12.5 million, Blue Ridge Public Radio reported. In May, Governor Josh Stein announced a $3.5 million grant from the federal government to help Canton build a new wastewater plant on the land. The approximately $75 million project will almost entirely be funded by state and federal grants, Smathers said. Speartas says he doesn't know what he's going to do with the rest of the property yet. His first priority is preventing future flooding. Unless they can do that, no one's coming to build anything, he said. Park Street, Main Street and railroad tracks all crisscross the Pigeon River in downtown Canton. Speartas envisions improving water flow under those crossways. There will have to be a major resilience effort moving earth, working with the Army Corps of Engineers, he said. The developer envisions multiple different concurrent uses for the mill site rather than one big occupant. He thinks that could include housing, tourism, some manufacturing without smoke and ooze, commerce and retail. On 40 acres of a northern part of the property, he envisions residential development that could include a hotel, condos or houses. He's also considering an amphitheatre. David Francis of the Hayward Chamber of Commerce hopes there is still a future for light manufacturing, such as ceramics maker East Fork Pottery, so that Canton doesn't lose its mill town roots. He said there is no appetite for industrial manufacturing with smokestacks like Pactiv to return. Smathers would like to see a higher education facility on the property, citing Western Carolina University, NC State University and the UNC School of Government as three wish list institutions. A healthcare anchor would be great, Smathers said, and he'd like to see outdoor recreation opportunities. He also wants a museum dedicated to Canton's history. I think you need to tell the story, Smathers said. We're always worried about being forgotten. One thing he doesn't want, a data center. Smathers said he held one meeting about a data center with a group out of Durham in January, which left him underwhelmed. He declined to name the group, but confirmed it wasn't Meta, Amazon or Apple. He has concerns about national security, hacking and foreign influence. The company couldn't answer questions that I had, and they couldn't point to successes and experience, which really did not make me feel at peace, Smathers said. Smathers says he's had a lot of conversations about what data centers do to a community, he said, remarking that small towns like Canton are told the facilities will boost their tax base, but he's not buying it. It would be nice to go from the situation we're in budget-wise to having plenty of money, he said, but not at the cost of a destructive force. In February, the town's aldermen voted for a one-year moratorium on data centres while they established parameters on local development. Speartas, who lives in Missouri but visits Western North Carolina frequently, is more open to a data centre as part of the future site. I want for the town the best, and what that means is good jobs, good tax base, high-paying tax base, Speartas said. In any case, the developer continued, the size of the mill property would limit what size of data center could go there. This property is not conducive to a mega center. But it's not entirely up to him. I have no idea what the town would want or would allow, the developer said. That's yet to be determined. A job to finish. Smathers' handling of his town's recurrent difficulties has raised his profile around the state, particularly as his party struggles to win over voters outside of urban centres. I've always thought that Zeb would be a phenomenal public servant at a greater level, North Carolina Democratic Party Chair Anderson Clayton told the Assembly. Right now, we're at a point in time where people are getting into politics because they want to be a shiny object. They want to be on TV or they want to be somebody important. We need more people that really just want to get shit done and that actually want to do right by people. Prather says lawmakers in both parties are aware of him in Raleigh, in part because of his advocacy for disaster relief funding. That extends beyond NC. Clayton says, whenever I go to national conferences, his name always comes up. Organisations that have been invested in the next generation of politics are looking at him. Some Democrats floated him last year as a possible challenger to Edwards, who was seen as vulnerable well before he ended his re-election bid this month, following a House investigation into allegations of harassment. Smathers said the murmurs are flattering, but it's not the right time. I got a few phone calls, nothing serious, he said. And I just said, look, I've got a job to finish. We have to rebuild Canton again. My duty is to my hometown. Smathers' wife is not ruling it out, though. I want Zeb to take any opportunity that he wants to, she said. But also, I think you have to be smart about those things. You have to know when it's right for you personally and when it's right for your family. There are certainly hints it's on Smathers' mind. He speaks in sound bites, frequently mentioning how bouncing back from the mill closure is Canton's mill town moonshot. And without being asked, he volunteered that he is a gun owner who also supports reproductive rights. But is a life in politics what he wants? You don't get happiness from politics, Smathers mused. It can be a very expensive and stressful hobby, to a degree. And I've seen you can really make a difference in people's lives. Are there other adventures out there? Maybe, Smathers continued. Am I open to those? Yes, but as it stands right now, I've got a job to finish. Well, a change of pace now. We're going to have a Courts and Justice article, A Contested Exoneration, and this is by Michael Hewlett. A three-judge panel of the North Carolina Court of Appeals heard arguments Tuesday about why the exoneration of four men convicted of killing retired NBA star Chris Paul's grandfather should be thrown out. The hearing comes almost exactly a year after Superior Court Judge Robert Brody dismissed murder charges against the four men, Christopher Bryant, Jamal Tolliver, Nathaniel Cawthon, and Rayshawn Banner, in the 2002 death of Nathaniel Jones, who was 61. Prosecutors allege that on November 15, 2002, five teenagers, including the late Dorrell Brayboy, attempted to rob Jones, the owner of a gas station in Winston-Salem, after he got home from work. They said the boys brutally beat Jones in the carport of his East Winston-Salem home, tied him up with black tape, and left him to die of a cardiac arrhythmia. The teens claimed innocence and said detectives coerced them into making false confessions. Winston-Salem police never recovered any definitive physical evidence tying them to the crime scene. But what ultimately led to their convictions in two separate trials was the testimony of Jessica Black, a 16-year-old from Davidson County who had befriended the boys. More than 20 years later, however, new questions about the case emerged after Black recanted her testimony, saying that Winston-Salem police coerced her into making false statements. Those questions soon culminated in a three-week evidentiary hearing held in Forsyth Superior Court in January 2025. 7 months later, Brody issued a 33-page ruling exonerating the remaining four men. Brayboy was stabbed to death in 2019, and dismissing all charges against them with prejudice, which would preclude a new trial. It was an extraordinary and stunning repudiation of the prominent narrative surrounding Jones's 2002 death. The ruling was also the culmination of a long and twisty journey. The four men filed claims with the NC Innocence Inquiry Commission, now known as the NC Post-Conviction Review Commission, that led to a 2022 hearing before a three-judge panel that upheld their convictions. The men then filed a separate appeal in Forsyth Superior Court, resulting in last year's evidentiary hearing and eventual exoneration. At the hearing Tuesday, state prosecutors Heidi Williams and Nikolaos Vlahos argued two things. First, they said that Brody erred in exonerating the men based on several claims, including ineffective assistance of counsel and new DNA evidence. They also argued that Brody abused his discretion in finding that Black's recantation was credible. Secondly, the prosecutors argued that even if Brody was right in exonerating the men, his remedy, dismissing the charges with prejudice, was inappropriate and contrary to state law. Forsyth County District Attorney Jim O'Neill, whose office prosecuted the case, attended the hearing. Asked for comment, he said he was glad that state prosecutors with the Attorney General's office joined our efforts to preserve the convictions of the defendants. I am sorry that the Jones family is still unable to get closure and peace in the killing of their loved one, he continued. At some point, I hope the legislature takes a look at our appellate process to prevent this from happening to other North Carolina victims' families. The convictions in this particular case have been upheld over the years by every court in North Carolina, including a three-judge panel. And yet, the case goes on and on. He said, the current appeal litigated the same issues that the three-judge panel reviewed. O'Neill, who has strongly criticized the Innocence Commission's work in the past as unfair, said the legislature should create a counterweight in the NC Conference of District Attorneys that can respond to the commission's inquiries. Members of the Jones family also attended. His daughters have previously said they believe the men are guilty. Paul, who retired from the NBA earlier this year after 21 seasons, released a book about his grandfather in 2023 in which he said he believed in the men's guilt, but was conflicted about such lengthy prison sentences for teenagers. He has not made any public comments about the case since then. Brad Bannon, one of the attorneys for the men, argued that state law allows Brody to dismiss the charges with prejudice. Brody found Black's recantation credible and concluded that if she had testified truthfully at the original trials, it's highly likely that the men would never have been convicted. Brody also found that for a variety of reasons, the men's confessions were unreliable evidence. Without those two pieces of evidence, Bannon said, the state's case collapses. That's why Brody dismissed the charges with prejudice, knowing that prosecutors would have a nearly impossible task of retrying them. As the Assembly previously reported, there were numerous gaps in the evidence presented in the case. Winston-Salem police collected fingerprints and blood from the crime scene and tested the clothes the boys were wearing the night Jones died. None of it linked the boys to the crime scene. New forensic testing showed that none of the DNA matched the men or Black. The only physical evidence used to tie the boys to the crime scene was a shoe impression lifted from the top of Jones's car. But even that wasn't a definitive match to a shoe police seized from Banner, and the impression didn't match any of the other shoes police seized from the teens. Williams contended that Brody abused his discretion, ignoring alleged inconsistencies in Black's testimony. Black testified for 6 hours, 4.5 of them under cross-examination, Bannon said. He argued that Brody had every opportunity to consider whether Black's testimony was credible, and he determined that it was. The judges did not make a decision on Tuesday, which is standard for this type of hearing. It will likely be several months before they issue a ruling. Now, the reporter on this article, Michael Hewlett, is the courts and law reporter for the Assembly. He previously worked as the legal affairs reporter at the Winston-Salem Journal, and he has won 2 Henry Lee Weathers Freedom of Information Awards. We have run out of time for this week's episode of the Assembly. We hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to tune in next time. I'm Naomi Lambert for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This program is now available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time, and if you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. And seeing as we have a little bit of time left, just wanted to give you a teaser for next time. We're going to have some pieces about internships and also an article about the price of surgery, particularly knee surgeries. So I hope that's going to be of interest, and we may have a little bit of time for some information about the congressional competition that will be going on for the election for District 11. So please tune in next week. I hope to hear you or hear from you soon.